Welcome, welcome, welcome to the SubHub podcast. I'm MK Sullivan.
And I'm Dani Moreno. And we are very excited about today's episode. We're going to start with a little bit of our kind of like chitty chat. What did we end up calling it?
Trail Tales.
Oh, okay. Well, that was the OG name that I was really pitching hard was Chitty Chats.
Chitty Chats with Dani and MK.
So if I say that here and there, that is why. Maybe I'm like subtly still trying to change it to Chitty Chats, but yeah, that also maybe is not the best name for that. But anyways, okay, so this first part, actually, maybe I should be more serious, but we do want to note on our last episode where we talked about Steon Ingerman's positive test, for which he took at, or was taken at OCC last year, and we still stand by everything we said. We just wanted to just kind of adjust one thing, is that we did use the words false positive kind of like in the same phrase. But really what we meant to say, and shout out to Corinne for helping us to really make sure that we get this right, not just for him, but for everyone that's in this sport and this journey, like having this new institution come in. It's really, you know, on us to make sure that we are educating everyone correctly, because the vernacular is very, very important, especially when it comes to this topic. And so technically his test was not a false positive. It is a positive test. Like, they found the substance both in his A and B sample. And I think what we are trying to articulate is, like, it was said in a couple articles that maybe he was going to challenge like the DNA testing of the urine. But besides that, it is still a positive test. And also in the process of appealing, again, that was just in a couple articles, but the main thing is trying to identify the origin of the substance. Again, this is for him in his defense, of the substance that was found in his urine, like trying to find out where in the heck it came from, because he did declare on his Instagram that he doesn't take supplements. So it's trying to figure out where it came from. But yeah, either way,
so not a false positive. It is a positive test.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Whether he meant to take the substance or not. So
exactly. Yeah. So now that's the state of the process. We're in positive tests. Now we're moving to the appeal of trying to determine of where it came from, because of the intention of where it came from. That's really what this. Yeah. Cool.
So we just wanted to clear that up.
Yeah, yeah. And another thing is that, like, the rules are always changing for WADA. There were some changes, I think, in the fall last year, which my coach will send me those, which is really nice when that does come up. So just make sure you're always checking the website. They have, like, a really nice database where you could plug in what you're taking, whether it's something prescribed from a doctor, something over the counter. I find it's better to type in like the actual ingredient name that you're trying, that is making up the medication potentially that you're taking, and you could see whether it's banned or not. So yeah, if you're going for that podium spot, top spot, age group awards, you may get tested. Okay, yeah. Cool. I'm glad we got that cleared out.
Yes. And because we were talking offline, there hasn't really been any like more news on this since the kind of chaos of last weekend. So yeah, as stuff comes out, like, we'll obviously talk about it on here and share it with you guys as well. But Sky Runner World Series announced their top athletes just like for the season this year in an Instagram post last week, I think. And on the men's side, we have some of our usuals, like previous champion Antonio Martinez, a kind of a newer name, I think, to skyrunning, definitely a name that most Golden Trail World Series people know, would be Rui Ueda, who is coming back from a pretty gnarly bike accident. Luison Cuefet, Roberto De Lorenzi, who some of you may know from Golden Trail, Nadir Maguet, I'm so sorry, you guys, I'm going to be saying some of these names wrong, Danny Osans, Frederick Tranchant, Elaine Santa Maria, and Manuel Marias. So pretty stacked field, and I'm sure that just like any series, we're gonna see some, as Brett Hornig calls them, random ballers showing up on these lists as well. So, and then on the women's side, Emma Cook Clark, very well known name in the skyrunning world from Canada. Sheila Avila, hopefully coming back from like a kind of a longer string of injuries, unfortunately. Johanna from Sweden, Hillary Girardi, Karina Carsolio, who we interviewed last year, if you guys want to go check out that interview again from Mexico, Julia Font, Marcela Ohana, and then Bailey Kowalczyk, who I know has participated in skyrunning events in the past, but has kind of been more of a Golden Trail World Series gal for a while. But it seems like she's kind of going to be heading back to skyrunning scene this year. But notably missing from this women's like elite top athlete announcement is world champion and skyrunner champion Clementine Joffrey.
Yeah, that's a big name to not be there. I'm curious if they like reached out to her or whatnot. We do know that she qualified for OCC this year, and they do have the world or the European championships, not the world championships, which technically this is like our version of NACAC, but
Yeah.
NACAC hasn't quite been the same as Europe. Like European championships are broadcasted in Europe,
They're
etc. And it's
huge.
they're huge. I like want to race them. Like I want to
Yeah.
go and be in them.
But
But
those are
yeah.
still relatively early in the season. They're like in May. So, yeah, I'm just curious to see what Clementine ends up doing this year. Like, is she going to another season? Is she just focusing on Europeans and OCC? It'll be interesting.
Yeah, it will be super interesting. Another thing to note is we are going to be talking a bit about Skyrunner World Series this year. So if that is a series or an area of the sport that really interests you, we are regularly going to be talking about those races and those results just because, one, we are an official partner, which is going to be very exciting. But two, it just like is an incredible series. A couple of just quick highlights since we won't dive too deeply into there. But there are going to be, you have to do at least four events if you want to go to the final and place in the top 20. And only those athletes are considered for the final ranking, which I think this is just such a great rule because this happens all the time in Golden Trail too, where you'll have athletes that show up maybe for the last couple races of the season and have stellar races and end up in those top places. But they also kind of like get into those rankings and kind of mix them up a lot, which I don't think is always the most fair thing for athletes that have committed truly to a series. And then they're like, wait a second, I'm getting bumped back like four spots because
Yeah.
these four incredible runners have decided to like join at the very end when I've been going at it since April or May.
Yeah, I've followed all the rules and therefore I'm maybe a little tired
Yeah,
now. And now I'm getting like absolutely throttled.
exactly. Yeah. And so with the World Skyrunner, they will, you could still go to the final if you don't do all four, but you won't be considered for the final ranking. And then the U23 category, you want to talk about that? I think that's great.
Yeah, just to be noted also about
Oh yeah.
the final is that if there are two different prize purses, so like there's a final prize purse and an overall season. So while not when you're not being included in the overall rankings, like you can't take away money from people that have been competing basically all year. You can only be considered for that final prize. A new U23 category, and I think the Golden Trail is doing something similar as well, but maybe on a smaller scale. They are allowing U23 athletes to part, well, not allowing, but they are, get to participate in two races. There's a special calendar out of the like 24 races that skyrunning has. Only seven of them count towards the U23 category, plus the final. And I think they're trying to provide some amount of support to these U23 athletes, although I don't think they know what that looks like yet. But yeah, it's super cool. I think I was talking to Tommy on our run yesterday. I was like, so cool that they're like helping all these U23 athletes like get to finals and stuff, but man, I wish I was under 23 when this was happening.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like the next gen, we're is going to be a force. Like, they're getting support from Skyrunner, they're getting support from Golden Trail. So if anything, maybe we helped pave the way in a little bit, you know, like with our struggle.
Yeah,
No,
because
it's
obviously,
really
like
cool.
getting to these finals and stuff, like opens you up to the sponsorship opportunities, and
Yeah.
just making prize money alone at a big race is like a huge deal if you're a U23 athlete. So.
Yeah. No, it's huge. And then the last thing, just to kind of, you know, continue to hype up the series again, we'll dive a little bit deeper next week because the first race is starting next week. But Skyrunner had over 70 athletes, elite athletes, reach out to them. So clearly it is a very desired series from an elite athlete perspective. I don't know what the numbers were on the Golden Trail side, but I'm going to guess potentially maybe they were about the same. So yeah, it's really cool. I think all the races are going to be super stacked, even with the addition of races. And maybe the addition races actually increase that interest because it's more accessible for some athletes. You know, Karina Corsolio is like a great example. Like, instead of having to fly to Europe all the time, there's more races closer to her now, which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, super excited.
And then Danny is racing this weekend and next weekend. You're doing a half marathon this weekend and Way Too Cool 50K the following weekend. So tell us a little bit about how you're feeling.
Yeah, it's I'm very excited because there's a couple of things. With the half, I guess I'm not as pumped for it as I was maybe initially because I am just so excited for Way Too Cool. I think this happened last year too with like Black Canyon, except my race was Boston Marathon and I still had to wait. But just being at a trail race, it feels so much like being at home. And so I just am craving to do a trail race. But, you know, the half is still, from the get-go, was very intentional. Like, the two halves that I chose were purposeful for Way Too Cool and potentially the strengths I'll need there. So yeah, I'm still excited for that. And I still have a couple friends that are pacing me, so I don't even have to think. So yeah, I guess I'm just gonna roll into it and see what happens because my last speed workout was Mesa Half Marathon. I basically did Mesa Half Marathon and then we did four long runs over like 10 or 12 days, however long it was. And that's been it. Like, I haven't touched on speed since. And so it's kind of like a fun experiment, too, to see what happens.
Yeah, speed
Yeah.
doesn't go anywhere that fast. You're
Yeah.
good.
Yeah. That's what I'm hoping for. And then, yeah, Way Too Cool. I'm stoked. I'm so excited for it. It is one of those races that's kind of like early season that has always been potentially a little too early for me, for at least a 50K distance. But I think what I'm most intrigued about is this is the least amount of training I've ever done for 50K, like mileage wise. And it wasn't even till this last week that my mileage even jumped up. And it was purely because of long runs. Like, most of my running has been like 55, maybe like 60, maybe 63 miles here and there for like per week. And then last week I just did like 80 miles to feel the long runs. So yeah, it's like a very unique block for me. I'm interested to just see what happens. But I feel like if there's any 50K where that'll work out, it's kind of way too cool because it's pretty
On
fast.
marathon.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
But it's fun to be a guinea pig sometimes. Like,
Yeah,
yeah.
exactly.
Tommy and I talk about this all the time. Like, sometimes Rick gives us training blocks that we're like, what is this? And then it always ends up working out. So you're like, oh, that was kind of fun. Like, now we have a new way that we can train for a race. We don't have to do the same thing every time.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, I mean, MK and Rick did their coaching conversation, and I'll do one with Terry and I that'll come out next week. But something I've been thinking about for our conversation is really leaning into our learning process together and like adapting and willing to try new things, but kind of keeping the core the same. Because, yeah, this was definitely a guinea pig one, but also we did it with the intention of knowing like, the next two blocks are going to kind of stick back to what we know works really well. And those are going to be like the two most important blocks of the year, right? Zagama and OCC. And I know mentally how engaging that requires me to be, Whereas this last block, I think, allowed me to kind of like get mentally refreshed. So I'm craving more mileage. I'm craving like those hard trail workouts. Whereas last year, coming out of the winter, I just couldn't imagine going straight into like really hard work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think when you have like the base, the years of training that you and I have, like the idea of running 90 to 100 miles a week all year round, like is exhausting.
Yeah,
Especially
totally.
because you like we don't really need it. Like it's very easy. Neither of us are very injury prone, it seems. And so it's like it's very easy for both of us to go from like 4 months of 50 to 60 miles a week to like within 2 or 3 weeks, like getting back up to 90 and holding it.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's what it is.
The
Yeah.
benefits of having been running since like 12.
Totally. 'Cause like
Yeah.
even this last week, the four long runs, I just wasn't nervous 'cause I love long runs. Like
Yeah.
that's always been my bread and butter. Like even in college, like take care of anything else or get rid of anything else, but don't get rid of my long run. And I just felt so back at ease. I'm like, oh, this is nice. Just like being out here and stuff. So yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, so be thinking about Danny these next 2 weekends as
Yes,
she's
I
out
yeah.
speeding around the roads and the trails.
Yeah.
And then the last thing we wanted to talk about before we introduce our guest is Canyons weekend, because lots of movement has been happening on the oh, well, I was gonna say the
Elite
home
list.
front. On the home front.
I love
Oh man. So in the 50K, we have Danny Moreno.
it.
Honestly, who are you? Like, you're running so many 50Ks now.
I know. I was thinking prior to this year, I ran Formidable, which I won that year. It was the USA Championship. And then I ran, what did I do? OCC and
Kodiak.
in Kodiak. Those are my
Yeah.
only 50Ks I've ever run, which I think is really funny because I do consider myself a 50K runner
Yeah.
for sure. And
Well,
like
this year you are.
this year I am, but this year I also decided that I think I'm ready. My body can just handle more. And way too cool is pretty fast. I'm expecting this to be pretty fast too. So just getting like two fast runs where you could almost like cheat and say, well, they are whatever 50Ks or just shy of it. But
Yeah.
they're fast. They're not like mountainous ones where, yeah, I couldn't do like two OCCs and then OCC. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, no, it does. Because
Yeah.
I remember the when I ran Mont Blanc Marathon and couldn't walk for like a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally different than like running
Yeah.
way too cool and then being able to run like 2 days later.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, after Kodiak is what gave me this idea is I felt like I could go run. And I was like, I think my body's maturing.
Yeah, for sure. So we got Danny Moreno, Jen Lichter, who's also running the TGC marathon this weekend. Valerie Arsenal from Canada, Juliette Soule from New Zealand, Tabor Heming from the US, also like bumping up to the 50Ks a ton. And Sam Lewis, someone else who doesn't run many 50Ks now, bumping up from the sub ultra world. On the men's side, Hayden Hawks makes sense. He did this last year before Western States. Eli Heming, Chad Hall, honestly, super stoked to see the three of them race.
Yeah.
Because last year Hayden won, but I don't know that that's a guarantee for him this year. Seth Ruhling, Peter Ferrano from Slovakia, Jeff Colt, Danny Jones, who just won Tierra 100K this last weekend, Cole Watson, and Stephen Kirsch, who we're pretty sure was in the 100K but just moved to the 50K.
Yeah, I think so when we were looking at this last week, but don't take that for fact. Yeah. No, both of these races I'm super excited for. This is a major, so the top 10 men and women qualify for OCC in 2025. Oh my gosh. I
I know
sometimes
it's so
hate
weird.
how they make us think ahead that far.
And just so you
Yeah.
guys know as well, I think there's like a decent amount of age group qualifying as well. I don't know exactly how it works, but I want to say that like top two in each age group get an automatic qualifier. Because I think I had an athlete last year who finished 11th at the in the Canyons 50K, but then she got in based on an age group qualifier. So if
Wow.
you're in like a an age group Make sure you check on those rules because I think you might be able to get in if you're still not in the top 10.
Yeah, we will definitely look at that as we get closer too, to make sure that's
Yeah.
clarified, because that would be that's major for sure. But yeah, it's a major, so you could qualify for 2025. That's the main reason, honestly, I'm doing this race, is to not fall into the same thing that I did this year with Kodiak, where I had to change. I was really sad. I was supposed to do Les Temples, and then I had to change to qualify because I did want to run OCC this year. So yeah, this one is to get it out of the way, and also just no pressure on OCC day, because only the top three qualify for the race next year. I
And
don't
even
agree with
still,
that. I don't agree with
yeah,
that at all. That
me
is,
either.
it should be the
Should be
top
top
10.
10.
Yeah.
But also, you still have to get a stone, I think, within the
Oh,
same year.
yeah.
Like, I don't
Yeah.
think you could do it in 2025. I think you still have to get your one stone before the end of 2024.
Yes. And that's why last year I also ran Eiger. So last year, my schedule was dictated a lot by this stuff, and it was not fun because I felt like I wasn't doing what I really wanted to do.
Yeah.
I still found a lot of joy in those races, but yeah, you know what I'm saying. All right. Yeah, this men's race is insane. Those are some heavy hitters. That's gonna be fast. And so that's like the 50K sub hub focus, but we also have the 100K because
Because I'm no longer doing Zagama, I am now doing Canyon's 100K. I've lost it officially. My brain is fried, but no, really, I just after having to drop out of Black Canyon, like I was so stoked to give the 100K distance a shot, and I didn't get to do that. And so Zagama will always be there. Might as well give Canyons a try. I can, go on the course and practice on it prior to the race. Way less likely to get sick, which I know for myself is like an actual big issue when I travel. So, yeah, I'm doing Canyons 100K.
Stoked. We kind of teased this a little bit when MK was trying to decide what she was gonna do. And it was really hard for me because I wanted her to come to Zagama, but I also wanted her to run her 100K because she worked so dang hard for that. And to have it, end in the way that it did, like, you deserve this. You get to go after this for sure.
Yeah, and I do really well on those trails. Like, I've won Way Too Cool. Like, I got third at, or I got second at Formidable, third at Canyons. Like, those
Yeah.
trails are right up my alley, probably because they're close to home and I can go over there frequently. But
Yeah.
yeah, I'm excited, especially because this year the course is like the last 40-ish miles of the race are like on the Western States course. So you have like athletes like Katie Scheid that are coming out literally just to be on the course before the race, get a little bit of heat training, I imagine, because like if it's anything like last year, it was hot as hell out there.
Yeah.
Jasmine Lowther, Addie Bracey, a bunch of names that we saw at Black Canyon that are coming back to try to qualify, like Anna Cassius and Anna McKenna, Erin Clark coming back and making her Western States bid. And then the men's race is freaking insane.
Yeah. There are some names on here too that I don't know if they're gonna race it, 'cause like Becca Wendell just got her ticket. So I
Yeah,
don't
I
know
would
if
guess
she's,
probably not.
but yeah, just a couple other ones too. Anna Mae Flynn, that's exciting. Amanda Basham and Naomi Brand, Stephanie Austin. Yeah, there this is hecka.
Hecka.
Hecka loaded. And then the men's race, oh my gosh.
The
Also, just like
Aderman, yeah, Adam Peterman, Petter
Adam.
Engdahl, Drew Holman throwdown.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's so, I'm so excited for that. Like,
Yeah.
also because we said our kind of fantasy matchups in mind's already happening in April.
Yes.
I'm so excited. Yeah, Adam Peterman and Petter are just,
They have
yeah.
the same UTMB 100K index, which is kind of crazy.
That is kind of crazy, actually. But it's wild because, like, there's some races that they would be in, and it's like, oh, that's the battle. But like you
Yeah.
said, Drew Holman's in there also.
Yeah.
Eric LaPuma, Rod Farvard. I
And
don't
Matt
actually know this.
Tiedel, all coming back from Black Canyon.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know this Luke Grenfellshaw.
From the
But yeah,
UK.
Justin Grunewald just podiumed at Tarawera, I believe. That So yeah, this is gonna be a crazy race. And this is Adam's like de not debut, but it's like his first race
His
back.
comeback,
His
yeah, from
comeback.
his stress fracture.
And yeah, it's gonna be wild.
And technically Petter's comeback from
UTMB dropout.
his UTMB drop, but also his bike accident
Yeah, that's
shoulder
true.
dislocation. Not
Yeah.
quite as big of a break as Adam Peterman had to take, but yeah, it'll be a fun little race in the canyons.
Yeah, that's gonna be awesome. Cool. Well, do you want to interview our guest today? Or not interview, sorry, introduce.
Yeah, we did already interview him, so
Oh, wait, sorry, one more thing on canyons. This is the
yeah.
list as of now.
Yeah.
Word is that it was hard to get in, but now potentially they are reopening the gates for athletes potentially like carrying over from Black Canyons. So the list still has time to change because it still is 2 months out.
Yeah, like 9 weeks.
9 weeks.
Yeah.
But it's just such a big race coming up for the American, North American region that we wanted to touch upon it now. So yeah, as the race gets closer, we'll touch upon it again. Names might change, but those are just a few names we're excited about. So
Yeah.
yeah, Vic Johnson, you want to introduce him?
For sure. So Vic Johnson is a registered dietitian and master's of public health based in Orem, Utah. He started his nutrition coaching at NAU, which we talk about quite a bit with him. He was working with student athletes in a research lab there. Since leaving NAU, he has started his own nutrition coaching business called Mountain Sports Nutrition, and we will put all the links in the bio or in our show notes so that you guys can check that out. We talked about pre-race fueling, different aspects of fueling during the race. We had a lot of questions for him, and we actually had to like take half of them out. So hopefully we can get him on the pod again some other time so that we can get deeper into trails and nutrition. So enjoy our conversation with Vic. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Never Second. Never Second uses a modular system that allows you to create the exact carbohydrate formula for your need and activity. Their products are meant to be mixed and matched so that you can have 30, 60, 90, or even 120 grams of carbs per hour. As a professional athlete, I was introduced to Never Second about a year ago after a rough race at the Mont Blanc Marathon. I was trying to take in gels that required a lot of water, but without a crew and the fact that there weren't enough aid stations to adequately match my intake, it became quite the struggle of a day. After that experience, I started using Never Second in training because their liquid gels weren't as sticky and require less water and are much easier to get down, making my race day and training nutrition immediately more successful and simple. And if you want to try Never Second, just head to neversecond.com, NEVER number 2.com, and use code SUBHUB25 for a 25% discount on all of your orders.
All right, welcome, Vic.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
How are you today? Is it snowy and cold in Utah right now,
Yeah,
or?
it actually is kind of one of those gloomy, cold days today. So, but we're doing good. Doing good.
Yeah,
Nice.
Reno's been really weird in terms of weather these days, but the sun is out today and I'm pretty stoked about it.
All the trails are in that like awkward phase where like there's too much snow and too much mud. It's like it can't decide whether to be frozen or like muddy. And so it's just, I don't know. I've been doing a lot of road miles lately.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna ask what your go-to is when the conditions are like that. Is it mostly road running?
Yeah, but I kind of hate road running. So I'll even just do really slow trail miles if I need to. But yeah, I'll do some road to get to the trails at least.
Danny is like a huge snow runner. I try, but it is really frustrating. But Danny does it all the time.
Yeah, I will say this year I've kind of shifted though, where I feel that I've checked that box maybe a little bit,
You like
but
did it
it's
last
also
year.
it's been pretty warm. So at least
Yeah.
as a, you know, a snow runner, the conditions are just a little too slushy to be doing it every day.
Yeah, it's just so slow when you get deep or like really the worst is like on really used trails. Like people take their horses on or whatever, and it's like the really frozen, uneven stuff that's just like ankle breaking.
Oh yeah.
So,
You gotta
sorry if
find
that
the
brings up PTSD,
Yeah.
MK.
Oh yeah. Fortunately, I am not allowed to run on the trails for a couple weeks, so PTSD is gone, you know. But so I'm curious, you're obviously a trail runner, as we just established. But we're also here to talk with you about nutrition. So how did you kind of decide to meld your passion for the outdoors and your career?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes way back in high school. And I'll spare you like all of the boring details, but essentially I was running cross country and track in high school and like looking for any way to get faster. I was really into it. Kind of coming from a basketball background, actually. I played high school basketball, but then the runners were way cooler than the basketball kids, and so it was more fun to hang out with them. So I
What?
started
What
running
school is
more.
this? I should have gone
Well,
there. Yeah, seriously.
I don't know if cooler is the right word. A
Yeah.
bunch of nerds out there, but so I was looking for any way to get better, and my mom had been into nutrition for a really long time, not as a career, but just like interested in it. And she told me, she was like, "Why don't you like try to like change how you're eating and see if you feel better, like see if you feel more energized, like maybe eat more food than you have been eating." And so I like put it to the test for a couple of weeks, and I did. I felt way better. And so that was like my first connection of like, oh, like what we eat actually makes a difference in how we feel. And then after high school, I kind of got to start getting into more of the trails and stuff like that. Although a lot of our practices, we'd actually like avoid our workouts and just like go up on the trails anyway. Don't tell my
Classic.
coach. So yeah, I mean, I always loved getting up into the mountains. But yeah, after high school, I started doing some shorter races, you know, some trail halves, a couple road races thrown in there as well, and then trail marathon, and then kind of started flirting with ultras and got into that, and that kind of sucked me in. And then I was kind of going to college while I was kind of getting into more of those, you know, trail running specifics, and then my undergrad was in psychology, so not super related to nutrition, although I mean you'd be surprised at how much, you know, motivation plays a factor in working with athletes and that sort of thing. But I graduated in psychology, you know, my wife got married, kind of traveled for a little while, and then we kind of settled in Flagstaff, and I was looking for new work, and I ended up getting connected, I can't even remember how, with one of the sports nutrition professors at Northern Arizona University. And he basically offered me a job to come in and work in his nutrition lab. And I didn't really have any like formal education in nutrition at that point. I had taken like one undergrad course or something like that. And I started working in his lab with the student athletes. And it was super cool research that we were doing. Like, we'd have all these cool interventions that we'd do with these athletes. And he basically like turned me loose. He was like, "All right, you can like learn how to like coach nutrition, like come under my wing, and I'll like show you how to do this." And so I was working with individuals and like doing team seminars and stuff, and just kind of learned how to like do it that way. And I was already passionate about it, but no formal education. And then there was a program that opened up, Masters of Public Health. So it's kind of like a dual degree where you get a public health degree and this dietetics degree. And that opened up, got into that, got my formal dietetics degree. And then I started working with athletes and still doing some of the research stuff with NAU. And then, yeah, so it's been like 5, almost 6 years since I've been kind of coaching athletes all over the world. So yeah, that's kind of how the two collided. Hopefully that answers that question for you.
Definitely. I don't know. Being a psychology undergrad, that to me just feels so related to nutrition, especially with athletes. Because personally, when I've gone through the lows, mostly like earlier on in my career in college and stuff, I felt like it was so psychologically related to other things going on in my life, not just in running. But the NAU Nutrition Lab, what an opportunity that was.
I
That's so
know.
cool. Did you work with only university athletes, or did you also work with pro athletes since Flagstaff is such a
So
mecca?
That no, I didn't work with anyone in Flagstaff at that point. It was just the student athletes. But then right around when I started doing that, I had like an Instagram where I was just like, I didn't even know what I wanted to really do with it, but like I was posting sports nutrition related things. And there was this Schemo athlete from Spain who was like a pro athlete, and he reached out to me. And he was like, hey, like, do you coach, like, do you coach athletes? And I was like, will you pay me to coach you? I was like, I do now. And so that was like my very first, and I'd started out like $25 a session or something like that. And like, working with a Schemo athlete. And I was like, I'm super new to this. Like, bear with me while I'm kind of learning, but like, I think I can still help you, because he knew like nothing. And I had been working with the student athletes for a while at that time. And then I was like, oh, I could like make a career out of this. And so then that's when I like started, you know, doing more social media stuff, which I kind of hate having to do, but like being on the social media, like putting myself out there. And then since then, I've just worked with, you know, hundreds of athletes worldwide. So.
That's so cool. What was the coolest or like most beneficial study that you felt you did while at NAU?
We did, I think one of the ones, it was called Mandy, the Mandy study, and it stood for meal, let's see if I even remember this now, it's been so long, meal aggregate nutrient density index study. And I was working mostly with the swimmers on that study, but we had like the football players in there too. And basically we would have them, we'd do these 24-hour diet recalls with the athletes. So we'd like pull them into the lab and then just like have this series of questions and this software that we would use, and ask them what they had eaten in the last 24 hours. And I mean, the biggest thing that we saw was like, and this can go into, you know, any questions that we have in the future about reds, but like underfueling, like these, especially these student athletes, it's just, they're just not eating enough. It's like, I don't even care what you're eating, like eat enough. And so that was one of the biggest things that we could see these individuals, like we would pull them in for the studies, and then we'd be able to look at their data and be like, oh, you're underfueling by 800 calories per day or something like that, and on average. And it was like, let's meet with that individual and then go over their nutrition and see where we can, you know, are you skipping breakfast, or are you eating something right after your swim workouts or whatever? And so it was really cool to be like on that ground level and like see the individual athletes make those tweaks, and then be like, come back the next time and be like, oh my gosh, I had like the best practice ever because I was like actually fueled, you know? So yeah, I'd say that was probably the coolest part of that study.
I like the meal aggregate density index because when I go grocery shopping and I ask my husband like what I should buy, you know, like, oh, do you have any suggestions for the week? He will literally just send me the word volume.
Yeah.
I'm like, great,
Lots
that's
of
so
food.
helpful. Thank you. Just
Yeah.
lots of it.
Yep. Tons of food.
No, that's cool. Yeah. And to work with athletes across or various athletes too, I'm sure that was very insightful.
Yeah, it's cool.
So you said, like you said, you work with hundreds of athletes across the world. And since we are focused on trail running and specifically sub ultra, we were wondering what you have found to be the key nutritional considerations for races like sub ultra races, considering their higher intensity.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a great question, and there's lots of parts of this that we could pick apart, but I think with all endurance sports, the focus on carbohydrate is huge. Specifically with sub ultra racing, where you're going to be, you know, maybe in that 2 to 5 hour range, or even shorter than that sometimes. It's so much less about what you're doing during the race. I mean, that's still an important component, but so much of it is about what you're doing before the race. And that pre-race carb loading protocol is so crucial, right? Because at these higher intensities, you're going to be burning through a lot of that glycogen. But at the same time, you might finish the race before you're done burning through all that glycogen. So the fueling during, it still matters, but it doesn't matter quite as much as, you know, compared to like an ultra where you're out there for hours and hours and hours and hours, where you're gonna burn through that glycogen and then you need fuel on top of that. So really the purpose of that pre-race, especially sub-ultra carb loading protocol, is to stock those glycogen stores in your muscles and your liver as much as you possibly can. And then of course you're still also going to fuel during, depending on the, you know, if it's a really short race, maybe you don't even need to worry about it. But really focusing on the, you know, the 48 hours leading up to that race. So if you have a race on Saturday, Thursday and Friday need to be really high carb days. So that's like number one priority I do with my, you know, sub ultra athletes.
Yeah, no, that is really interesting to hear. And when you say, just for folks that are listening, when you say glycogen, like you might not even reach the glycogen, like what is that?
Yeah, so glycogen is basically just a fancy word for stored carbohydrate. So basically, when you eat carbs, whether that's bread or sugar, water, it doesn't really matter. Your body's going to take that and form it into these chains called glycogen. And you store that in your muscles and your liver. And then it can be in those muscles, ready for those muscles to use as fuel when it needs it, right? So, especially at those higher intensities, you use more of that glycogen. And so, maximizing the storage is going to be the biggest component of that pre-race nutrition. And you know, a bigger person can store more of that glycogen because they have bigger muscle mass. So I mean, the general recommendations are like 8 to 12 grams of carbs per kilogram of body weight. So it depends on how big you are, but that's a ton of carbs. And that's what I'll tell my athletes. It's like, yeah, we can get into the specific numbers, but like, just eat so many grams of carbs. Like, just eat everything with carbs in it the couple of days before. And sometimes that might even entail like eating your meals that are, yeah, focused on potatoes and rice and noodles and bread or whatever, but also like filling in the gaps with, you might be sipping Tailwind or Scratch throughout the day, just because that's just another way you can kind of top off on those carbs. So.
Yeah, my coach and I went through this before Black Canyon because I'm pretty bad. And I imagine a lot of athletes have this problem too about like you get nervous before the race. And so you
Yeah.
like have a hard time like getting that food in. And
Yeah.
so I actually, yeah, I found that like using a high carb drink mix to supplement whatever I'm eating that morning is like pretty
Right.
much the only way that I can like max those carbs out.
Yeah. Yeah. And
Yeah.
that's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with doing that. Some people are worried, like, oh, it's like sugar water or whatever. And it's like, that's what you need, right? Like,
Yeah, you're
that's the
going to be doing
purpose.
that
That's the
during the
point.
race.
Exactly.
Is
That,
so oh,
oh.
sorry. I was just going to ask really quick, like, do you have to practice that? Like, say someone has a race this Saturday and they're like, "All right, I listened to this podcast, I'm going to carbo load." And they're like, "But I feel like uncomfortable."
Yeah.
And, they're nervous about that, or they get to the point where they're like, "I just don't want to feel so bloated or uncomfortable."
Yeah.
Do you practice that, or you just like trust that the body's gonna be okay?
Yeah, you definitely need to ease into that. And with my athletes, I'll have them try to have a high carb intake regardless of whether they're racing or not, like because they're training, especially with a higher volume, like you have such a high glycogen turnover rate that you want to make sure that you're just eating a lot of carbs in your day-to-day normally, but especially those 48 hours leading up. So what I'll usually tell them is like, use your long runs to kind of practice this. So if you're doing a long run this weekend, then Thursday, Friday, have pretty high carb meals and eat the types of foods that you think you might be able to eat. Where, you know, MK traveling to Black Canyon or whatever, like you might have not had like, you know, full 100% control over like what you're gonna eat. Hopefully you were able to eat what you wanted to, but like eating the types of foods that you know will be available to you. Even if that has to be like, I'm gonna eat fast food the night before, it's like, okay, then eat fast food the night before your long runs. Because the more you can simulate that long run, especially with your digestion and that sort of thing, the more you can simulate the race, the better that's gonna go. So yeah, definitely work up to that higher carbohydrate intake in your normal everyday life, but then trying to ease into really high carb intake before your long runs is going to help you be able to do that better for race day and know how that feels. And some of that might just be a little bit uncomfortable, and you kind of get used to that uncomfortable feeling. But you can also make adaptations, in the gut as well. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that's an important point because I think a lot of runners and even myself at times, like you're like, okay, well, I got to practice for this long run, but you're not practicing the rest of the week by like you're only giving yourself that day to like have a high
Yeah.
carb intake, and it's like that's useless because you're
Yeah.
training harder most of the time than you are, you know, racing,
Right.
especially in terms of like volume.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Daddy, did you have a question about salad?
I like as far as carbs go before a race, you brought up potatoes and rice, which those to me are simpler carbs, maybe,
Yeah.
depending on the type of rice. And
Yeah.
so I was curious, like, what if someone just had a bunch of salad? Does
Yeah,
it matter what the carb is, in your opinion? Or, like you said, you could train the gut to do whatever, like. Personally, I love salad. So, what if I just down three bowls of salad?
I mean, salad is awesome in so many ways. But you would have to eat so many leafy greens to get in a decent amount of carbs, right? You're going to get a ton of fiber and a ton of micronutrients, a ton of vitamins and minerals. But the actual carbohydrate, the volume that you would have to eat to hit, like, let's say you're going for 8 grams per kilogram of body weight or something like that, that's a freak ton of salad. And so it's just easier to do if you're eating these really carbohydrate dense foods that are going to be, the rice and potatoes and things like that. And don't worry so much about like the complexity versus simple. Your body will actually more readily store simple carbohydrate as glycogen. So if you want like really quick glycogen storage, something like Tailwind or Gatorade or whatever, or Gooze, I don't know if you want to be doing that because you're going to do plenty of that during the race, but like those sorts of things are going to store more easily. But yeah, starchy fruits and grains and veggies and things like that are going to be great. So really whatever you like that's a dense carbohydrate source, that could be, you could be 6 bowls of cereal the day before, like that works. Like whatever floats your boat, go with that.
I will
This
say
is,
one of my best races, I ate an entire bag of tortilla chips.
yeah, that's great.
I was gonna say this is great for my like beer and candy pre-race ritual.
I don't know about the
Candy.
beer. We can have a conversation about that later, but the candy, great. That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, just getting those carbs in. But
One way or another.
so, how should runners adjust their carbohydrate intake for longer races as compared to like sub ultra that we focus on here?
So you'll still want to do that pre-race carb loading protocol. Like that's pretty much across the board, you want to do that. You just end up relying a little bit more on that on the shorter stuff. On the longer stuff, obviously, after everyone's a little bit different, and it kind of depends on how much glycogen they stored before the race, but you're gonna eventually run out of that glycogen, okay? And if you're not replenishing that with outside carbohydrate sources during the race, then you're gonna bonk or hit the wall. We've all felt that. It's a horrible feeling. And if you can avoid that, that's great. And so usually what I'll recommend, and this, this goes for sub ultra as well. But kind of the general recommendations right now are anywhere from 30 to 90 grams an hour. Again, we see athletes doing more than that. And I love how more of these ultra athletes are being like more outspoken about their carb intake. I was listening to, I can't remember which podcast it was now, but with Hayden Hawks, maybe it was a single track pod, but he was saying like, yeah, in my training, I'm trying to hit like 110, 120 grams an hour. And it's cool to hear that. So there's kind of just this massive range. And so really what I'll do is I'll start with my athletes and kind of see where they're currently at. And I'll say, all right, keep track on this next long run. and see how many grams an hour, we'll average it out. And maybe they're at 40 grams an hour, which isn't like abysmal, but it's like, yeah, we can probably improve that. And so over the course of their, as their volume ramps up, we'll try to increase that carb per hour load that they're doing on their long runs. And so really for ultra running, you want to keep that carb intake essentially as high as you possibly can without having any negative side effects, right? Because if it's causing a bunch of GI issues or things like that, like we don't want that to happen either. So really just as high carb as you can, whether that's sub ultra or ultra, it tends to be harder to do that for longer, right? The longer you go, the more palate fatigue you're going to get, the harder it is on your gut. And so trying to train for that on your longest long runs is going to be crucial. But yeah, high carb all the way before, during, and after. It's kind of the answer to all sports nutrition problems is eat more carbs.
So is it that the intensity doesn't matter? Like an hour is an hour, whether you're running 6 minute pace or 20 minute pace?
No, it definitely does. It definitely does. And at lower intensities, you can get by with fewer grams per hour, right? And that's kind of why it's that range of 30 to, I don't know. I almost want to change it in the literature and say the range should be to 120 now because so many athletes are doing that. But yeah, at lower intensities, you don't need as much because, well, you're burning more body fat as fuel at lower intensities. And you're not going to run through that glycogen quite as quickly either. And so you still have that as kind of a backup tank as well. So you just, yeah, you don't need quite as much. With my ultra athletes, though, because so much of race day depends on how well they've trained their gut, even on some of the shorter, less intense things, even if they don't technically need the energy from fuel during those workouts or during those shorter, easier runs, I'll tell them to fuel those like they're in the race. Because it tells their gut, it helps their gut have better gastric emptying rates, and it helps them build the transporters that move those carbs into their bloodstream. So you're making these adaptations by eating high carb, even on some of those lower things. And that's not always the case, but especially if someone has a long way to go to get to that high carb intake, I'll have them start training their gut on pretty much all of their runs. So.
And you mentioned earlier, like for pre-race, the grams of carbs per kilogram of weight. And I'm just curious if that is kind of also related to in competition, like fueling as well, like based on somebody's size and their gender, should they be eating less or more carbs during that hour?
Yeah, that's a great question. I only know of a little bit of research that's been done on that, and it's more in relation to how fast different body sizes are burning through that glycogen. And this is kind of like an obvious answer, but like smaller body sizes are burning through that glycogen faster because they have less glycogen stored, or they're getting to the end of their storage tank sooner
That's so
because they have
opposite of what I thought.
less stored, right? Yeah, you would think that like they're more efficient, smaller runners, right? But because they're storing less, because they're eating less, and because their muscles are smaller, their liver's smaller, they can't hold as much glycogen. They burn through it quicker. And so the research basically says that these smaller athletes benefit from a higher carb intake compared to these larger athletes.
That's so interesting.
That's the only research that I know of that's been done on that, but it is an interesting question. And you can do like metabolic testing, right? Like you can get in and see what percentage at different percentages of, or different heart rates or different percentages of your VO2 max, how much fat you're burning versus how much glycogen or carbs you're using up. And then you can kind of fuel accordingly, but not a lot of people get in and do that sort of testing. So kind of the default is just like as many grams of carbs as you can, right?
Yeah.
So
Whatever your stomach can handle.
yeah, really.
Yeah. Because I mean, you could very well have like two females, same weight, roughly the same body type, and one could be utilizing less carbs, right? Still.
Absolutely.
So it's not
Yes.
like a
Yeah.
one-to-one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting.
Lots of individual variations there.
Okay. So, personally, this weekend, I tried to eat 110 grams of carbs per hour during my long run. I've been feeling, why are you laughing, MK?
That's awesome.
Good for you.
Because I've been feeling pretty good at like 80 to 90. Like, I feel like nothing
Okay.
is really shaking me up, right? Like,
Yeah.
it's been pretty consistent. But it did get tough for me at like hour three, where I was tired of eating. The first 2 hours,
Yes.
I was like, oh, this was so smooth. And then the end of the third hour, I was like, okay, now I'm starting to feel like this is too much for me. And so I'm curious, like, what are some examples or suggestions for an athlete like me who's trying to bump up to try and mitigate like GI issues?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I guess that's a
That's
big
huge.
question.
First of all, congrats on trying to bump it up. That's
Thanks.
awesome. Didn't have enough adversity in your life as is, so you
Just had
want
to shake it up.
to shake it up a little. Yeah, I mean there's a lot of things that can cause like gastrointestinal upset, and the symptoms of that, comes in a lot of different ways too, right? Some athletes might feel nauseated, some athletes might have bloating, some athletes might have diarrhea. Like there's all sorts of things that can happen. We've probably experienced all of that at some point or another. Hopefully not all at the same time, but yeah, there's a few things that cause like are the biggest causes of GI issues that I see with my athletes and that are also reflected in the research that we have. The first thing is dehydration is like the number one issue with athletes that I see with ultra or sub ultra. Basically, when you aren't getting enough fluids, you'll become nauseated, essentially, right? Basically, your body releases a bunch of antidiuretic hormone, and that makes you nauseated because your sodium levels are going too high compared to your water. So that's one of the biggest things for nausea that you can do is like if you ever start feeling nauseated, think back on the last hour and be like, all right, how much fluid was I taking in? Did I only do 200 milliliters? Did I only do 300 milliliters? It's like, I could probably do better than that and then start drinking more, right? Whether that's water or sports drink or whatever, drinking more is huge. Now that also comes into play with the second issue of the gastric emptying and GI issues is a high osmolality, or a high concentration essentially of carbohydrate. So if that concentration is too high in your stomach, it's gonna stay in your stomach. It's not going to empty into the small intestine where you can actually then get it into the bloodstream. So it's not doing you any good in the stomach. And so that's one of the main things that when people say training the gut, like that's one of the main things you're training your gut to be able to do is to empty carbs from your gut into your small intestine faster. Because the faster it can get in there, the faster it'll get into your bloodstream and the less chances of causing bloating and gas and nausea and that sort of thing. But if the concentration is too high, whether that's because your sports drink, different sports drinks have like different ratios of the carbs to the water. There's a spectrum, but I would say scratch is like one of the lower, just the scratch sport is like, I can't remember, it's like 24 grams per 500 milliliter per soft flask or whatever. And then you have like Tailwind at like 50, and Goo Roctane I think is also 50. There's some that are even higher. Like I think Martin has a drink that's even higher than that, right?
Never
So
second.
there's like, yeah, Never Second has one that's higher. And if you can handle that, great, that's awesome. You're getting in a ton of carbs in a relatively easy way. But if your gut's not used to that, then it's going to be a challenge. So lowering that concentration can be really helpful for some athletes who have experienced that. But then again, it's like we got to get those carbs in another way then. So that might mean more energy gels or more chews or more real food. You know, maybe you're doing potatoes on course or something like that, you know, or waffles or whatever. But making sure that you're drinking water with those as well, so you're keeping that concentration low. So that can be something that really helps as you're increasing those carbs, making sure that you're keeping fluid high so that that concentration of carbs in your gut stays relatively low so it can empty and not cause issues. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah,
It
and
definitely
so
does. I was just gonna say, like, that was a great explanation of actually training the gut. I
Mm.
never knew that's what I was like. Yeah, I
Yeah, you
just
got to
like
train
drink some water
the
sometimes, throw
gut.
some sodium in there, and it'll figure itself out.
And really it will, but that's like what's happening behind the scenes, right?
Yeah, and so can you explain the importance, like, because you kind of highlighted the water part of it, but including an electrolyte balance into your efforts, and if there's like a big difference between like a shorter distance race and a longer distance race when it comes to that.
Totally. So this might fall under like the category of like hot takes. But people care way too much about electrolytes, I think. And you'll ask different sports dietitians and they'll have different opinions, and that's valid because the research is kind of all over the place. But looking at like the research, like the meta-analysis of the research as a whole, I'm not convinced that we need to be supplementing electrolytes, primarily sodium, potassium, magnesium, like we are. If people do, that's great. There's no downsides to doing that, but I almost how I tell my athletes, like I almost see it as like an insurance policy. But honestly, if people are eating enough food in general, especially here in the United States, like where we eat so much sodium, your body stores that. We store that in our bones, and so it can break that down when we're starting to get a little bit lower. Granted, you are losing a lot in your sweat. So the longer the event, the more of that you're going to lose. And then you're just hoping that your body can compensate for that. So having that as kind of an insurance policy, especially for like 3+ hours, or if it's really hot and you know you're going to be sweating a ton, then you know, it's never a bad idea to have those electrolytes on board. And in most sports nutrition products, you know, we're talking about Scratch or Tailwind or whatever, like there's going to be a decent amount of especially sodium in those. But honestly, there's so much research on like Ironman athletes, and they'll like control for their sodium intake, and there's like no fewer cramps in the sodium group. Like performance is the same across the board. Like there's no like gastric emptying is the same. Like I haven't been convinced that like we need to be so stressed about the electrolytes as we are.
Yeah.
That being said, again, you can definitely have electrolytes in your products. You can even take salt tabs. Just make sure if you're doing that, you're also drinking fluid with that, because you can even have too much, you know, if you're not drinking the fluid as well.
That's what I was going to ask is if you can have too much sodium. Yep. Okay.
Hypernatremia is essentially too much sodium with well, you know, you can do that by under drinking, or you can do that by over salting, essentially.
Can you bring on more cramps by having too much salt?
Yes. Yeah, you
Okay.
can.
I was
Dang,
gonna
that's
say, I
so
think I've done that
interesting.
before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just know so many pals in the sport who are like, I'm a heavy sweater. I have a lot of salt on me, or I've done a sweat test. So that's why I take sodium caps like every 2 hours or something
Right.
like that. But then simultaneously, some of those same pals still get cramps. And so
Yeah.
I've always been curious if, like, maybe it's like overcompensation, like.
It certainly could be. And there's a genetic component to cramps. Like some people are just more susceptible to cramps. Like my main training and racing buddy, like he cramps like no matter what he does. And it's like, poor guy, sorry. But there's kind of two main theories. And like one is like the electrolyte side of things. And it's like, oh, these people who are cramping are like underdoing electrolytes. I'm not convinced of that theory. Again, everyone can do whatever the heck they want. But the theory that I feel like makes the most sense is this, it's this neuromuscular fatigue theory, where basically your neurons get tired of firing. And so they get stuck in the on or off position, essentially. And that's what a cramp is. And so essentially how you get over that, and you've probably noticed this, like if you have a muscle group that's cramping, but then as you go through a training block, like you kind of find that it just kind of fades. Like that's just because you're just like any other adaptations that you're making with your training, like you're pushing that system. And so it gets more use, those neurons get more used to firing. So what I'll tell my athletes is like, if your quads are cramping a lot, then do a ton of quad strengthening work, right? Like hit that in the gym and that should help with their cramping. Along with that, they found that acetic acid, or essentially like vinegar, right? Like apple cider vinegar or white vinegar, that can kind of tell those neurons to keep firing. So it kind of switches back on or off those neurons and tells them to keep firing. And so pickle juice, like that, some people think like, okay, it's the sodium in the pickle juice that's helping. And that may be true if that athlete is truly low in sodium. But honestly, there's more research indicating that it's probably this acetic acid that's telling those neurons to fire again. And there's actually even products out there. There's one called Hot Shot, I think. It's like these little bottles. It's like little shots of acetic acid that can like tell your muscles that are cramping to like fire again. It's really interesting.
So you got people out there taking shots of vinegar. That's
Yeah, I was gonna
wild.
say, I think we just unlocked a new level. I'm gonna be taking shots of vinegar from now on. Oh my gosh. Well, okay, so that is an interesting hot take, but it's not the first time I've heard it. So I'm starting to become
I'm not
convinced.
alone. I'm not
Yeah,
alone out there. Okay,
yeah.
that's
I
good.
feel like when we talked to Bill from Never Second, he said something similar to us about electrolytes. So not super surprised, but
Yeah.
the vinegar, I am
I just met
surprised
with
about.
Bill last week. That's cool.
Cool.
That is cool.
Smaller. So kind of moving past hydration a little bit. Because I feel like this is more of something that's talked about in the long distance, especially like long ultras. But I don't know if it could be important in a sub ultra as well as like what role do fats play in the diet of a long distance runner in general? And like how can you optimize that fat utilization during a race?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. Lo loaded question, MK. So in the diet in general, very important macronutrient, right? And I think a lot of times people hear fat and they think like, oh, bad, because like I don't want to be fat or whatever. But that's obviously not the case. Like it's an essential macronutrient, super important for the utilization of the fat soluble vitamins, so A, D, E, and K. We can't really use those vitamins unless we have enough fat in our diet. And then particular fats like omega 3s, omega 6s, really important for brain health. Cardiovascular health. There's more research now showing like better improved recovery with athletes who are taking omega-3s, whether that's in a diet or through a supplement. So really important macronutrient in the day-to-day. Usually we don't want athletes, especially female athletes, going under like 20% of their calories from fats. That's not very hard to do. Like usually if you're eating enough food, you're probably eating enough fat. Again, here in the US, like it's pretty easy to get enough fats in our diets. But just really important for hormonal health and making those hormones that regulate everything that's happening in our body. So as far as fat as a fuel source, that's a great question. And essentially, there's a really cool graph that I don't know if you guys have seen, but basically it shows how, like, what percentage of fat versus carbohydrate that you're using at different intensities. It's called like the crossover effect. It looks, I don't know if you can see that, it kind of looks like that. But basically, at lower intensities, so at rest, we're mostly using fat. So it's almost like 100% body fat that we're using as fuel. And all of us, even little tiny distance runners, have a ton of fat that we can dip into, right? Like Olympic runners have 100,000 calories of fat that they can dip into at any time. So you could theoretically go for days and days and days. If you're going at an intensity of zone one, like you might start feeling hungry, but energy-wise, like you could keep going, right? Which is why it feels easier, right? When we're going at those lower intensities, like you can just go forever on fat. As that intensity starts to increase, you start to use less and less body fat and more carbohydrate. Okay. And that's going to be a mix of glycogen and the outside carbs that you're taking in from drinks and goos and stuff like that. And it's everyone's a little bit different. Which Danny, I think you had highlighted this earlier that like every athlete has a different point at which they're gonna start using more carbs than fat, right? And but for most athletes, that's around like 30 to 45, 50% of their VO2 max, even up to like 60% of their VO2 max sometimes. So it's kind of this big range. But like zone three, zone four, like that's kind of start where you can kind of expect to be like, I'm probably mostly using carbs as fuel versus fat. So the longer a race is and the higher intensity that race is, you want to take in more carbs because you're going to burn through that glycogen faster and you're out there for longer. And so the shorter that race, like your intensity, like a sub ultra race or like a VK, like you're like redlining it the whole time. You're only like you're really not using any fat. Like you're using carbs. You're using the glycogen that you stored and or some of the carbs that you're taking in during that race. Whereas an ultra marathon, you might be down in zone two, three for a lot of it, and you're probably mostly using fat. You're still using a decent amount of carbs, but you're mostly using fat.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever started a race that was 50K or less where I didn't immediately feel like we were going so hard.
Yeah, Black Canyon.
I'm definitely not using any fats in those races.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have athletes though that would, even though they're running a shorter distance, maybe they're going to be out there longer, and so they potentially would take in fat for like, the first couple hours. Say they're doing a 50K and their expected finish time is like 7, 8 hours, right?
7 or 8 hours. Yeah.
Yeah.
They certainly could, and there's no downsides to doing that. But again, just stored body fat that we already have going into that race is plenty fat to get us through a week-long race. So we don't really have to take that in. Now, it can be a little more satiating than just a straight carbohydrate drink or something like that. And so, especially during those longer ultras and maybe even a shorter ultra, you're skipping meals. And so even though like a carb drink might hit your energy needs, it's not going to satiate you, right? Because it's emptying, hopefully emptying from your stomach quickly. So sometimes purposefully eating something at an aid station, and I don't know how many athletes are taking stuff with them, but eating something at an aid station that has a little bit more fat or protein so that it's like more satiating, but you don't need that energy wise. Right. You just, it's more of like a satiating palate fatigue thing. Like, if you can't get in any carbs, then great, eat something so you feel good. But like, it's really more about that satiation factor.
I get
Yeah.
that.
And I don't know how you feel about this, but what I typically tell athletes is once you start taking stuff from an aid station, like potato chips or something like that, like don't count that into your nutrition. Like that's just additional
Yeah.
stuff. You got to keep, because you don't
Totally.
know what's in there, you don't know what you're grabbing, how much you're grabbing. So like keep
Yeah.
eating those, 90 grams of carbs or whatever, but like eat the potato chips to make yourself feel a little bit better.
Right. Yeah. If you're liking the potato chips, go for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really hard to quantify. I mean, I don't know how many potato chips were in that sweaty handful that I grabbed, like a few chips, 20 chips, I don't know. So yeah, that's a great strategy.
That's definitely happened to me. OCC a couple years ago, I was going into the last downhill. I was like, it's only 3 miles. Grammy, can I have some cake and chips? And I had like just made this big move and I just stuffed it in my mouth and I had run out of everything. I was like, that's fine. And then I just kept running. I was like, oh no, this is like a 10K still of work.
Right.
I should have just packed more stuff versus just grabbed a handful of
Yeah.
stuff.
Well, and like not relying on the, like as much as you can rely on the aid station is great. Like if they have the sports drink that you've been training with or whatever, like that's awesome. But because you've been having to practice this stuff in your training, like you kind of want to go into that race a little more independent, and so that you can kind of have a little bit more control. And sometimes that's hard if you don't have drop bags or a crew or whatever. So it's okay to rely on aid stations, but you're probably going to go into that race with like at least a rough structure of being self-sufficient, and that's usually more helpful.
Definitely. Well, we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but maybe just to like swing it home is, men versus women and their nutritional needs. If we can focus more like on this higher intensity kind of like sub ultra area, just like if there's any main differences.
I mean, I'll start it off by saying like there's a pitiful amount of research on females in any topic, but like especially trail runners. So like that's a needed gap that we need to fill. But yeah, I mean the biggest differences are going to be with metabolism and hormones. Mostly outside of the race itself. So I mean there's certainly some research as to like what higher estrogen levels are doing to like your substrate use. So like how like are you burning more fat or less fat when you're hormone when your estrogen levels are high, during luteal phase. So there's something to be said about having higher carbohydrate intake, and as well as higher protein intake during that luteal phase of your period. So like middle of the month, like from ovulation on, you basically want to have higher, just more food in general, but especially like higher carbohydrate intake and higher protein intake, because you're basically your body's more, it's more catabolic with those higher estrogen levels, and so it's easier for your body to break down muscle and that sort of thing, and so you want to make sure that you're optimizing that nutrition there. So, I mean, in a day-to-day sense of your overall nutrition, that's probably what I would say is like, especially starting with ovulation, like just try and keep overall calories high, and especially focusing on a little bit higher carbohydrate intake and a little bit higher protein intake. Now, there's, when we were talking about the grass, the graph of the crossover effect, women tend to use more body fat at higher intensities, which is actually one of like the proposed mechanisms of like as distances get longer, like why do women seem to do a little bit better compared to the men? And that's not always the case, obviously, but like there seems to be like some anecdotal like evidence out there that that may be true. And that's because you're able to rely on that body fat at these higher intensities. And so if you can't keep that high carb intake going for whatever reason, palate fatigue or GI issues, you're still able to keep going at a higher intensity. So that's just kind of like a female superpower that you guys have, which is cool.
And then we just get to
But as
stack
far as
carbs on top of it.
I know exactly, right? So yeah, I mean that doesn't necessarily change your, racing strategy or fueling strategy during that race. But it is, it might be nice to know like, okay, I have this 110 gram goal during per hour during this race. But I wasn't able to keep that up for 6 or 7 hours. You know, I was starting hour four, that kind of started to slip, and then I ended the race at 60 grams an hour. It's like, that's not the end of the world, because you're still able to keep those high intensity paces because you're able to burn more of that fat at those higher intensities. Hopefully that makes sense.
No, that definitely makes sense. And men don't have to deal with that.
No,
Okay.
not, I mean, not in the same sense. I mean, you can become like fat adapted, like more fat adapted. And honestly, people are focusing way too much on this right now, because it only can get you a tiny percentage bump in performance. But like, you can push that crossover point up your like up that intensity scale. And so you can kind of teach your body to burn more fat at higher intensities. But females have that already just built in. So males can kind of do that a little bit. They can push that starting from their baseline, they can push that up a little bit, but not that much.
It
Does
seems
that
like
make
they'd just be better off just like increasing carbohydrate and protein
sense?
intake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess my final question kind of in this area is like, again, for me at least coming into the sport with these sub ultra races was, the jostling of the intensity of, very fast downhill, uphill, et cetera. And then personally, I noticed like as a female, if I was going to be on my period, or I was right before it, feeling like I needed to drink so much more water. And I was just curious if that is a difference too, that's kind of like across the board for females.
Yeah, they haven't really, again, there's like a pitiful amount of research on this, but they haven't really seen differences in hydration and like fluid uses, like how much your body's using. So yeah, I can't really speak to that point that much, but again, on an individual basis, like, do whatever feels good for you, right? If that feels like you need to plan on drinking more, then work that into your fueling plan.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I guess final question would be like just to shout you out a little bit. Can you tell us about the services that you offer to like your clients and athletes,
Yeah.
and where can people find you?
Yeah, totally. No, I appreciate that. So what I do mostly with my athletes is one-on-one coaching. I have like a 16-week program that I put athletes through, where we cover all of these topics that we've talked about today, but even more in detail, and then taking those principles and then applying them to the specific athletes, right? And we'll talk about day-to-day nutrition. We do a full diet analysis. We do blood work. I work with athlete blood tests. We do blood work with all the athletes. And then we go more into the sports nutrition stuff, where we'll talk about pre-workout, pre-race fueling, during workout, during race fueling, and hydration and electrolytes, and then recovery nutrition. And that usually takes about the 16 weeks to kind of get through all of that. And I love it. It's like the coolest thing to see these athletes come in, like, not feeling very confident in what they're doing. And they might be doing a lot of things great. But like, just knowing that what they're doing is what they should be doing, like, at the end of the program, it's like, I know what I'm doing. I know how to apply these principles. It's their confidence just goes through the roof. Like, it's cool just seeing that there's so many variables on a start line of a race, right? And so if you can get rid of that, not get rid of, but like minimize the stress that comes from that nutrition variable, that can be really, really cool to see. So one-on-one coaching, that's probably the main thing I do. I'm also working on building out a course, like an online course that's not out yet. So stay tuned for that. But I'm co-hosting a retreat in Chamonix, France, this summer, which both of you have been there, right?
To Chamonix, yeah.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
we'll
Okay.
both be back in August probably.
Yeah. Super, super cool. We're actually gonna be living over there, me and my wife and our little baby. We're gonna be over there,
Oh, so cool.
starting
That's so
in
cool.
June. So yeah, we're gonna be there for like 3 months. It's gonna be amazing. But I'm co-hosting this sports nutrition and trail running retreat in July, where basically we'll all be staying in this chalet and we'll have guided runs every day. All of it's catered. We have our own chef who's going to be there. The chalet itself is super cool. There's like a hot tub and sauna and stuff like that. So it'll be a cool place to
Sick.
hang. And then I'm going to be there doing sports nutrition stuff with all of the athletes who are there. So one-on-one sessions, we'll be doing group like workshops or seminars with all of the athletes as well. One of my good friends and colleagues, Cam Harder, he runs Ridge Athletics, who's he's a PT for outdoor athletes, a physical therapist. So he'll be there like doing one-on-one sessions with everyone. So they'll get their own like private PT to work on all their niggles or whatever. And he'll be doing like leading us in warm-ups and things like that. So yeah, it's going to be a really, really cool, kind of unique retreat because there's lots of trail running retreats, right? Especially in the Alps. But not with a sports dietitian and not with a physical therapist there. So it's going to be really, really cool in that regard. But yeah, if people are interested, you can find me on Instagram. I'm Mountain Sports Dietitian, Vic Johnson. You can find me there, or you can look at my website, mtnsportsnutrition.com, and find all this stuff there too. So,
That's super cool. Yeah. And we'll definitely link that in the show
okay.
notes of this podcast. But yeah, that retreat sounds awesome. I mean, it sounds like a professional training camp. Like you're checking all of the boxes. And it looks like it's July 8th through the 13th.
Correct. Yeah,
So
thanks.
beginning of July. So you'll be ahead of all the UTMB madness for anyone
Chaos.
who's heading over there. I
Yep.
personally was there early July last year, and it's such a great time to be there.
I'm so excited. I've never been, so this is going to be
Oh,
my
you're
first
gonna
time over
love it.
there.
That's
I
so
cannot
cool.
wait.
It's yeah, it's gonna be
So.
incredible. But yeah, Vic, thanks so much for joining us today. Just kind of perusing over some, overall questions of sub ultra nutrition and just for trail running in general. And we'd love to have you back someday. So yeah, thanks again for
Awesome.
joining us.
Yep. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, this has been the SubHub podcast. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe to Instagram and YouTube. Love you all. And yeah, brought to you by Free Trails.